Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. We help you get unstuck so you can do what you love and get paid what you're worth consistently. I'm your host, David Schreiner Khan.
Our number one goal is we want to help create this culture of connection so that your employees feel welcome, connected, and engaged, and are producing at the highest level they can produce at.
Today on episode 453 of Smashing the Plateau, I'm here with founder and lead facilitator of SwiftKick, Tom Kriegelstein. I'm going to ask Tom how to help people feel welcomed, connected, and engaged, and much more. Find out more about Tom, along with all of our previous episodes, at smashingtheplateau.com. Now let's welcome Tom Kriegelstein. For the past 15 years, Tom has trained over 500,000 leaders on how to build a culture of connection within their team and organization. He holds an unprecedented 7 national speaking titles, is a TEDx speaker, held a Guinness World Record, and sat on the board of the New York City Entrepreneurs Organization for 5 years. In his free time, Tom leads forums for the Entrepreneurs Organization, is an executive accountability coach for business owners, and he co-authored the Amazon best-selling book, First Year Student to First Year Success. On a personal note, Tom lives in New York City, is an avid runner, and was named after a cat and loves peanut butter. Tom, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Thanks, David. Those are all true facts. I swear they are. Each one has a great story behind it, but I am named after a cat and I do love peanut butter.
Okay. So I've got to ask you about the being named after a cat. What's behind that?
I was born on a farm in Michigan, and a month before I was born, my parents found a cat on the side of the road and they decided to call it Tomcat, which is pretty normal name for a cat. And then I was born and they realized that Tom was a great name for a human too. So they decided to give me the name Tom as a human. And luckily they changed the name of the cat to Tiger so that there wasn't confusion in the household between two things being named Tom. That cat, by the way, that cat lived to be 22 years old, human years.
Wow.
It died when I was 21. And just by default, then I became this cat person because of it. Yeah. Cats don't live that long.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. So let's get to the heart of what we're going to talk about, which is your expertise. And I'd love to hear a little bit about what's behind what it is you do. Why is it that you have chosen to focus on the particular area that you train people on, this culture of connection?
Yeah, it started for me early in my career, which is probably if there are parents who have kids in college or high school, a question that those kids usually grapple with is, what am I going to do with my life? And I was that exact kid, and I really struggled with it, had a lot of anxiety around it. And a speaker came to my school, and he totally changed my perspective on purpose and also opened up the idea that there could be a career in public speaking. And I was struggling at the time coming out of high school with a C grade point average. And I got super involved in my college career and it completely changed my life. Got academically succeeded in college. And then I started to realize that I could be a speaker. I had the skill in speaking. There's a career in it. And I could do it around my purpose as something that was valuable to me, which was the co-curricular side of the institution. That's everything that happens outside the classroom. And while most people think it's the college experience is mostly just in the classroom, the reality is the culture of the campus is what really makes or breaks a student's experience. And there's great research behind it. And I discovered that this culture also makes or breaks an employee's experience. And so this is where we started to develop this concept of culture of connection, that when someone feels welcome, connected, and engaged within a team or an organization, they're going to excel more than if they didn't feel that way. And so then we built trainings out of that and grew it from that sort of core.
So I'm really curious to know, based on your description, how many students today think about selecting a college or university based on the culture rather than based on academics?
Very few. And that's what's interesting. And the Center for the First Year, which is a national organization, finds that 30% of students drop out or transfer their first year. And the number one reason is some sort of life situation, like financial, family, something along that. But the number two reason is because they don't feel socially connected to the institution. And so while there's all these the U.S. news and report that talks about academically the top schools, I would love another one that talked culturally, what are the best schools? And I'll give you one thing. If you're a parent out there looking to send your child to a college and looking for the right one, there are certain colleges, University of Akron being one and University of Delaware as two that I know of, that have a special program for freshmen that students have to apply to it. And when the students apply to it, they get to do this additional training before the rest of the students show up. And then these students are sort of handpicked to be the leaders of the campus. And the goal there is that they are plugging into a leadership position. They're plugging into a community of students who are doing a lot more than just partying. And if we know that we're the average of the 7 to 10 people around us, then at college, surround yourself with amazing students. And those students are the ones that are running the clubs and organizations on campus. So I wish there was a national list that said these are the top five or ranked schools based on the culture of the campus instead of just the academics.
So now let's jump to the business world along the same theme. And let's actually talk first about employees. So as someone who is looking for a position as an employee, what kinds of questions should you be asking so that you can identify the best cultural fit for you? Forgetting about the kind of work or the compensation or the other factors that most people focus on when they're looking for work, what are the questions you should be asking that will determine the best cultural fit?
Yeah, the very first thing is ask around the core values. In a company that it has a weak set of core values and doesn't live and breathe those core values, then the question is, who are they? And oftentimes, if there isn't a set of core values that are lived and breathed on a daily basis, then how do they determine what to do in any situation? That would be the first thing, is find out, what are the core values? Do I personally align with those core values? And then, does the company actually live and breathe those core values? Because Enron had some great core values, but we all know what happened with Enron. And then also things like Facebook. Facebook has a core value that says move fast and or break stuff and move fast, like iterate. Whereas Apple won't release a product until it's perfect. Which one do you fit better with? And that's important because the culture of the company is going to reflect those core values. Then, do the managers live and breathe those? Who are the managers? Do you connect with the managers? There's that famous saying that people don't leave jobs, they leave managers. That idea that the people you're going to work with, do you enjoy working with them? It doesn't mean you have to be their best friend. You just have to enjoy working with them. And Gallup does a lot of research around this, and I'm pretty sure they have. I'm trying to remember what their last research was in terms of employees feeling highly engaged, engaged versus disengaged. And it'll come to me in just a moment when I have that exact study in front of me to know what it is. But that the reality is that most people are either engaged or disengaged in their work experience, and very few are highly engaged. And when you're highly engaged, it means you align with the core values and the work style of both the company and your manager and your team.
Yeah, I've seen that Gallup study, and I know they conduct it every year, or at least pretty frequently. And I know that the results are abysmal. Not only are so few people actively engaged in their workplace, I was astounded to learn that there's a pretty sizable percentage that not only are disengaged, but they actually sabotage their employer every day at work.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We call those negative Nellies.
Yes, and we've all seen them.
Yeah, and we've all worked with them. And so here's the question. If you have a negative Nelly in your team, it's one of two things. One, fire that person. Or shall we say, free up that person's future. Because that person is only going to actively pull the rest of the team down. A players want to play with A players. B and C players want to play with A players, but A players do not want to play with B and C players. And so if you keep the B and C players, the A players are going to leave because they don't want to hang around that culture. So by keeping your B and C players, you are actively hurting the best part of your organization, which are your A players.
So now let's shift and focus on the employer side. So if you're leading a business or a company, how do you find the right cultural fit and find those A players that will really support your success?
Yeah, there. The first thing is in the hiring process itself. Make sure the questions that are attached in the hiring process line up with the core values. For example, here at SwiftKick, our core values are play to win, raise the tide, open doors, open hearts, feed your butterflies, and see it through their eyes. So when I'm asking questions during the hiring process, I'm asking several questions that relate to each one of those core values. And then I grade that person on that core value. So they get a grading on play to win or raise the tide or see it through their eyes. That becomes one part of the hiring process. That way, what I'm doing is I'm hiring for a cultural fit attached to our core values. And the reality is our core values at SwiftKick are going to be completely different than another company's core values. It all starts in the hiring process. Then once the person's hired, make sure you're continuously coming back to those core values on a weekly basis or a quarterly basis. We have a one-on-one meeting every week with each employee. And in there, there are the same set of questions every week. And they're based we have it based on every core value plus a few extra. And then on their quarterly performance review, it is based on their core values plus a few extra. So we're constantly coming back to it. We're living and breathing these core values.
So Tom, I know earlier on in this episode, we talked about how you got started in paid public speaking. Is that the primary activity that you're currently engaged in? And is that most of what SwiftKick does, or are there other aspects of your work that you spend most of your time and the activities involved?
Yeah, the majority of our time is in keynotes and facilitated workshops for companies and colleges. That makes up, I would say, 85% of the work we do. The last 15% is in coaching, one-on-one coaching, product sales, such as the book you mentioned in the intro. But the majority comes in from content creation and content delivery, is what I like to break it down into.
Okay, and what is the primary problem that gets solved through the kind of work that you do?
Our number one goal is we want to help create this culture of connection so that your employees feel welcome, connected, and engaged, and are producing at the highest level they can produce at. So what we're solving is apathy, disengagement within a team or an organization.
What would you say are some of the biggest impediments to overcoming apathy and disengagement today?
The biggest one is having some sort of baseline understanding of where your employees are at. This is why we use a training. We have a training, branded training called Dance Floor Theory, where we use dance floors as a metaphor for a team or an organization. And I know at first it sounds really strange to think about dance floors when we're talking about engagement. But when you look at a dance floor from the top down, you'll see that there's different levels of involvement. The same is true in your organization. And up until this point, a lot of organizations try and use one style of engagement for everyone. But the reality is, on a dance floor, if someone's in the center, fully engaged in dancing and having a great time, they need to be engaged in a completely different way than the person who's all the way at the edge with their arms crossed, who's saying, don't you dare try and get me on that dance floor. And so we've divided up into six different types of people on a dance floor, and same thing within an organization. And each level thinks a different way and wants to be interacted with in a different way. So step one, recognize where your team is at, individual people on your team. Step two is decide if you're going to keep the disengaged people or if you're going to let them go. Then step three, engage those people at the level they're at, feeding them what they need to get to the center of the dance floor, to be A players, or what we call level five leaders, which is also Jim Collins uses level five leadership as well.
Right. Sounds like it's not necessarily simple and it's probably hard work.
It is. And that's the problem is that, but so is success. I wish success were just simple and we could all do it. But that's the reason why there's some companies that crush it every single year and continue to be on the Inc. 5000 or 500 or 100 list. And then there's other companies that fall off and can't make it. And I have a quote that I use often in the keynote that I said, if you want to go fast, go alone. Or if you want to go far, go together.
So I wondered if there might be a really great story you could share about a company that actually does a really great job going together.
Yeah, let me give you an example from a college, because I worked with a college around this. And I want to give a University of Akron as an example that I mentioned earlier, because we do work with them every year. And the challenge is, how do you recruit and retain? Recruit great students, retain those students so that they re-up every single year. And it starts with the recruitment process. They're choosing students based on the core values of the institution, what fits well cultural-wise. Same thing with employees. And then they have this training, this orientation. And at the orientation, they're going through a series of processes with these students to really help them connect with each other and to connect with the culture of the campus. That's critical. So few companies that I know do a strong orientation. If anything, it's a video or it's a talking head in the front of the room. But the reality on a dance floor is that dance floors are going to be stronger when there's strong connections, relationships built up. The same is true in the organization. So connect your employees with each other. Akron does a great job at this. They spend a lot of energy and resource in the first 90 days of that student's experience at their campus to connect them with each other and to connect them with the institution. Then they have this filter that feeds the trending leaders into leadership positions. Within an orientation batch of a larger company, you're going to notice pretty quickly in that orientation who are the ones that are gung-ho ready to go. And we call those, within dance floor theory, we call those motivated trains. And so as a leader, our job is to clear the path for those motivated trains and let them move forward. And then keep letting them move forward to the level they're willing to produce at. And Akron does a great job because after orientation, they feed them in another program. They become leaders of the campus. And then the final thing is that those leaders eventually start supporting the people at the beginning. And in dance floor theory, we call them fives. And you know someone's a leader five because they're crushing their job, what they're supposed to do. But then they also are helping the entire organization because they want to lead the organization, not just do their job. And a four leader might do their job amazingly, but they're not quite at the spot where they're helping the entire organization by going and supporting someone who's just starting off that has nothing to do with their job. And Akron does this because then it constantly feeds this process. In academia, it's called near peering. They connect people together around from a few years above to the first year students coming in. And I've seen it at corporations as well, the near peering concept, when it works well. Now, it has to be aligned around some sort of career path where the person coming in aligns with this person who's a few years ahead of them or several years ahead of them. There has to be a purpose to that meeting, because I've also seen near peering fall off the rails when it doesn't connect around a purpose and the person who's in the senior leadership position feels like it's a waste of time.
Right. And I bet that there's a lot of work behind the scenes to get an organization to function at this level of engagement that you've described.
It is at the complete level. However, go all the way back to the very beginning. And the first thing I would say is acknowledge that there's different levels of engagement. And just by a rough guesstimate, see if you can find out where each of your team members are at. And who are your trending leaders? My guess is you probably already know it. So that's the first step. And then I would say for any new employees, build out some sort of orientation or onboarding program that does more than just train them on the technical side of the job.
Yeah, I think you're totally right that just acknowledging what's going on and where you are and look at what's around you is a really important first step.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how few, it's just like the simple example of taking time to work on your job or on your career or on your company versus in your team, in your organization, in your company. So few leaders or employees take the time to zoom the microscope out, put on the owner's hat, and think about the organization from the top down. That's what we're saying within dance floor theory, whether you're the leader of a team or the leader of the entire organization, is we're telling you to go up to the VIP section, be the owner for a moment, and look down at your organization and realize that, holy crap, Sally over here has been crushing it, but we've been keeping her in her same position. She's ready to go. She's a trending leader. Or John on the other side here, he's a five, but we keep treating him like a negative Nelly. And different levels of engagement need to be fed different levels of motivation.
If you want to rise above the noise, doing what you love and getting paid what you're worth consistently, check out smashingtheplateau.com/bestnetwork and learn how we help entrepreneurs like you. Mention Smashing the Plateau and receive 1 month free membership in Best Network. Yeah, so Tom, clearly you have spent a lot of years working at this and you have built up a great amount of expertise. I wondered if we could talk a little bit about what you've done in your own business to create the kind of long-term success that you want, particularly efforts that you've made to build consistent, stable streams of revenue?
Yeah, it's a great question. On the first part, what have I done to build up a great company? I suggest following some sort of strategic planning within an organization. There's several that are out there. We happen to follow Gazelle to Rockefeller Habits from Vern Harnish. That's the one we have. There's The Great Game of Business is another one that's out there. Find something that attaches to it. Second, core values, purpose, mission. Take the time to figure those out within the organization and then actually do something with them. Don't just let them sit on the shelf. Don't let them just be words like integrity. Have them be actionable things like play to win. So we can say, hey, how did you play to win this week? That goes in. Now, that's the first part of your question. Then the second part is around the revenue. It's interesting because in a service industry like speaking and keynoting and facilitating, it's rare to create a reoccurring revenue stream because typically a conference books and then it doesn't book for several years. What we've discovered is that on the college market is that the students turn over every 1 to 3 years, meaning that we can have, I've worked with some schools for 14 years in a row because we work with their freshman orientation, meaning we're doing the exact same program or versions of it. It's evolved over the years, but we're doing versions of it. But that school keeps rebooking us because they know we do a great job. They need it. And it's a brand new group of students. So while the client has seen it already, the students have never seen it before. And so we get to rebook it every year. That's what I love about the college market. That's why we wrote the book on college success, because every single year, brand new group of students go out and they, our parents or aunts, uncles buy this book. Schools buy it in bulk for their freshman success classes. That's our reoccurring revenue stream that we've built up within this market. Now, another thing, if I could add one more,
sure,
is the ability to recognize that a speech or a keynote is really just it's a billboard for something. Always, most speakers have something attached to it that they get to upsell or add to. Oftentimes, that ends up being a coaching, a VIP mastermind group, some kind of online training support thing that the people buy into, or they're buying into a bigger package. The organization's buying into a bigger package of coaching or facilitated consulting that happens throughout the year. When a speaker starts to think about that, then they can understand how a $10,000 or $15,000 speech can turn into a $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000 contract.
Yeah, those are great examples. So thank you for sharing those. Tom, whom do you know personally who's done a really remarkable job of smashing the plateau?
I was trying to think through this when you gave the question, and it's interesting because I was going through, my very first thing is I went through my business contacts, and I was thinking through that. But then I realized, actually, I want to give my mom as an example. And she's top of mind for me right now because I just helped them write a biography of their life, my parents. And my mom was born in the South Side of Chicago. And she was, her dad encouraged her to get into the convent. So she did, but then she got kicked out because she saw that women weren't treated as equal within it. And she had opinions around that. And then she went and became a social worker and went out and did some really good work in the world. But everywhere she went, she was trying to take what was the standard or the status quo. And if the status quo didn't provide equal access or equal voice to everyone involved in it, then she would try and break through that. And to the detriment of relationships on her part, to the detriment of financial success on her part, to the detriment of being outcast by the community, society, she constantly would push and break through to help those who couldn't offer her anything in return. And so when I think about someone breaking, smashing the plateau, that's who I would think about. And she built a life out of that. And she also then built a career out of it as well, doing consulting, doing speaking, doing teaching.
Wow, what a great example. Thank you for sharing that example about your mom.
Appreciate it, thanks.
Tom, what's coming up for you in the near future?
We have The Dance Floor Theory, the book, is in the works right now. This is going to be the blueprint that if I'm a leader of a team or organization and I want to figure out how to apply or build this culture of connection, this is going to be the book, the workbook that guides you through it. Out sometime end of next year is our goal. That's a big thing that's happening. Another big thing that's happening is the growth into the corporate space. We're expanding more and more, hiring a third speaker here at SwiftKick to do these trainings that we do. And then we're going to build out online modules to be able to allow people that potentially couldn't afford to bring us in, that they can send their leaders through a training to be able to be a part of it.
Sounds great. And if somebody wants to go deeper with anything you've shared, access any resources you have or learn more, where would they go?
Yeah, I tell them to Google SwiftKick. And what's going to happen is three things are going to come up. An 80s rock band called SwiftKick that's trying to have a revival career. A lot of videos of people SwiftKicking their friends in the rear on YouTube. And then us. And if you find that one, you'll be able to go and check out our website. There you'll find out all the information about me. The good news is I'm the only one with the name Kriegelstein that you can find. So if you just Google Tom Kriegelstein as well, it's Tom Kriegelstein and all the socials that are out there. Find me, connect with me, ask me the questions that you have.
Sounds great. Well, Tom, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a fascinating discussion about your life work. My guest today has been founder and lead facilitator of SwiftKick, Tom Kriegelstein. Thank you again, Tom, for joining us.
Much appreciated, David. Thanks, and thanks to everyone who's listening.
When you visit the Smashing the Plateau website at smashingtheplateau.com, you'll find a summary of each episode along with the links we mention on the show. Today, we discussed how to create a culture of connection and how Tom has built consistent, stable revenue in his own business. Would you like more consistent, stable revenue in your business? Go to smashingtheplateau.com and click on Get in Touch to connect directly with me. Remember to subscribe on whatever platform you listen on and leave a review if you can. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. I'll see you on our next episode.